American troops could be on the ground in Liberia as soon as today, after President Bush made the decision yesterday authorizing U.S. forces be deployed there, that at least according to a report in USA Today. The president's on a month-long vacation at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, and says he made his decision after meeting with Pentagon officials. Deploying U.S. forces could then clear the way for international peacekeepers to move into Liberia. The USS Iwo Jima and USS Carter Hall have been positioned off the coast of West Africa since Monday. Saudi Arabia still wants to see the classified section of a recently released congressional report on events leading up to the September 11th attacks. That portion deals with the suspected involvement of foreign governments with those who carried out the attacks. Saudi foreign policy advisor Adel al-Jabbar says it's important for his country to know if it's been implicated in those attacks.
We want to find out who the terrorists are, who the people are, if there are any links, and if there's any misinformation, we want to clarify that, and that's why we went to the president asking that the 28 pages be released. He decided that this was not the time to do so.
President Bush denied the request because he claims declassifying the document would put current investigations in jeopardy. Yesterday, Saudi officials allowed the FBI to question a Saudi citizen about his friendship with two of the alleged hijackers. Omar al-Bayoumi has been identified as a likely Saudi intelligence agent by a congressional investigation. Israel has released more than 300 Palestinian prisoners today, but Palestinian officials are dismissing the move as a sham. A bus carrying some of the former prisoners arrived at a checkpoint outside the West Bank town of Batunia earlier. The first went off the bus, flashed a V for victory sign, while others knelt and kissed the ground before being reunited with their family and friends. Right-wing Israelis, as well as relatives of victims of Palestinian suicide bombings, had opposed the decision to free any of the prisoners, despite the fact none of those released today were directly involved in any attacks on Israel. Palestinians regard the prisoners as heroes of their nationalistic cause and have demanded amnesty for all 6,000 prisoners being held. One Palestinian cabinet minister said today's gesture is worthless and a meaningless theatrical. Step.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The nation's largest wildfire has now charged about 77,000 acres of timber and brush in Washington. The Fawn Peak Farewell Creek Fire Complex was ignited by lightning strike June 29th. A red flag warning has been issued for the area due to the potential for more lightning. The death toll, meanwhile, has climbed to 14 as wildfires continue raging across Portugal. Seven separate fires sparked by a record-setting heat wave have burned 135,000 acres of woodland across the country. Fires have prompted the Portuguese government to declare a national disaster and ask for help from the EU and from NATO.
Hey, honey, I rented some videos. Thought maybe we could just stay in tonight, snuggle on the couch.
Great. I'll put one in.
Use a wrench to disconnect.
Honey, this is a video about how to repair a washing machine.
I know. Shh. I love this part.
Have a passion for fixing things? Sears has over 4.5 million parts for all major brands of home appliances and lawn equipment. Call 1-800-4-MY-HOME. Click on Sears.com or come into a Sears Parts and Repair Center. Where can you find parts for all major brands, no matter where you bought them? Sears. Good life, great price.
Diplomats from the United States, Japan, and South Korea will all be gathering in the next few weeks for a planning session ahead of scheduled negotiations with North Korea. Those coming talks aimed at resolving the nuclear impasse with Pyongyang. Far East correspondent Celia Hatton has more from Beijing.
The United States, Japan, and South Korea are working together to gear up for talks with North Korea by holding a joint pre-planning session. The Reuters news agency is quoting an unnamed Japanese official as saying that all three countries will hold an informal meeting sometime in the next 2 weeks. Not long after that, all six countries, including China, Russia, and North Korea, will meet to discuss the future of North Korea's illicit nuclear weapons program. An official date and location for the talks has yet to be announced, although most analysts expect the multilateral negotiations to take place in Beijing in late August or early September. Celia Hatton, Beijing.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. On missions, master spies synchronize their watches. In ballets, talented choreographers synchronize their dancers. And in One Direction, manual transmissions synchronize their gears. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first, until we tested 6 Tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today, or visit TornadoAir.com. Like the Mission Impossible team goes forward by synchronizing their watches, manual transmissions go forward by synchronizing their gears. For smooth transitions as you shift, the rotational speed of one set of forward gears is matched by synchronizer rings to the speed of meshing gears. Reverse gear, however, is not synchronized, so it sometimes grinds in protest. Here's a hint. Don't force it. Just push the clutch in and pause a few seconds, then try it again. Now, you're in sync with both your gears. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome. Today is day 139 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 694 in the search for Osama bin Laden. I seem to have forgotten about that guy. I think that works well for this administration. Let's pretend that the whole thing is about searching for Saddam Hussein. Well, yeah, he had nothing to do with 9/11, and the CIA has just acknowledged that. But we need to look for him. That needs to be the thing that's on the top of the news. That needs to be the thing that we're talking about. This is Tom Hartman talking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations. Broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system and streaming audio on the internet all around the world from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Have we strayed so far from the founders' ideas of 3 separate branches of government that democracy is now at risk? I want to get into this a bit here in the first hour. In our second hour, we're going to be asking, will repealing NAFTA and the World Trade Organization help or harm our economy? Big story in the news today, the nine Democratic candidates. I guess the folks on the right like to call them the nine dwarfs. We should call them the 9 noble warriors, shouldn't we? Anyway, they all got together in front of the AFL-CIO, what was it, yesterday or the day before, and pitched their positions. And it's really interesting, you know, who's in favor of what is called free trade, who's in favor of what's called fair trade, who's in trade, you know, tariffs, WTO, GATT. What does all this stuff have to do with reality? How does it affect you and me? Is it setting us up for another Great Depression? How did the last one happen in relation to these kinds of issues? Lots of fascinating information to mine there, as well as giving us a perspective, a good understanding on today's news. On what is the real impact of this stuff? Did Bill Clinton sell us out in '96 with NAFTA and GATT, which led to WTO? Was Ross Perot right with the giant sucking sound? A giant sucking sound from the south. I can't quite do Ross Perot. Anyway, was he right? We'll talk about that in our second hour. And does our heavy reliance on credit card and mortgage debt put us both individually at risk of economic disaster and as a nation at risk for another Great Depression? We're going to have two guests on in our third hour, one who's going to talk about this broadly and the other who talks about credit counseling, what you can do to get control of your time, life, and money, your credit card debt. But in our first 2 hours, it's just going to be you and me. We're just going to be talking about these issues. Number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Our quote for the day comes from James Madison. This is published in Federalist number 47. You'll recall the Federalist Papers were those ongoing dialogues. It was presented as a debate, but it was really a dialogue between mostly James Madison and Alexander Hamilton. Madison wrote probably 60% of them. Hamilton wrote maybe 30% of them, and then George Mason and John Jay wrote a few of them. And they were published as a series of newspaper articles over the course of about a year in 1787 to encourage Americans to vote for, in their various states, ratification of the Constitution of the United States, which was proposed to replace the Articles of Confederacy that the nation had been operating on basically since the Revolutionary War. James Madison in Federalist number 47, and this is so germane to this first hour, said, "The accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands, whether of one, a few, or many, and whether hereditary, self-appointed, or elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. The accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary in the same hands." You recall in Federalist number 10, Madison railed about the danger of one group with one ideology, what we would today call a political party, what he called a faction back in 1787, of one faction taking control of all three branches of government. And here also in Federalist number 47, same thing again. Is that happening today? Well, the Republicans control the Supreme Court to the point that they were able to throw the 2000 election to George Bush, even though the Florida we don't need to revisit that one. But in fact, you know, in a 5-4 ruling, the Republicans on the Supreme Court even ruled that you and I do not have a constitutional right to vote for the President of the United States, which, by the way, turns out to be true. There's this thing called the Electoral College. And in fact, in the early years of this nation, individuals didn't vote for the President of the United States. Electoral College representatives were appointed by the states. We didn't vote for the Senate either. They were appointed by the states. They didn't want too much democracy, you know. Could be a little dangerous. Get the rabble involved, as John Adams, you know, look out for the rabble. Or like Abigail, you know, when Benjamin Franklin's grandson, Benjamin Franklin Bach, wrote an editorial in the Aurora, his newspaper in, as I recall, it was Massachusetts, might have been New York State, calling Adams, John Adams, during his presidency, calling him old, querulous, toothless, and lame. Abigail just started just shrieking about this guy, writing letters to all their friends and going on and on to John about how this guy had to be put down. And so sure enough, 1798, old John gets the Alien and Sedition Acts passed and starts arresting newspaper editors, but that's a whole other topic. Anyway, just received this from one of my groups. This is an email from Zen Pickle in our chat room. By the way, if you want to drop into the chat room, go to TomHartmanShow.com. Click on the chat links, and that'll get you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe, which has wonderful chat software. Push the chat button, and you'll be there. He says, "I just received this from one of the groups. To all of you who signed up for the Do Not Call law, this week I received a card in the mail. It looked all right. It said, vote for your favorite cola, Pepsi, or Coke, and receive a complimentary 12-pack. So all you have to do is, like, check a little box and mail this back to them. Postage paid. It didn't look suspicious. But for some reason, I kept looking at it. Then I found it. At the bottom of the card, there is a very small statement. It is so small, it's hard to read. But here is what it says. By completing this form, you agree that sponsors and co-sponsors of this offer may telephone you even if your number is found on a Do Not Call registry or list." And the folks at the Ayn Rand Institute say, don't worry, business will ultimately act in the best interest of everybody. They're not out to fool us or screw us or take advantage of us. Well, the reality is most small businesses, that's absolutely true. I have run many of them in my life. I've done business with many of them. We live in a small town in Vermont. I go out of my way to walk into town to buy things from local merchants, even if it costs a little more than it does at the Walmart. It's a half-hour drive away. Most small businesses are good organizations, and medium-sized businesses. You know, the bank in town. It's a multi-million dollar organization, but it's real. They loan money to communities. They've got this co-banking thing where if you want to put your savings with them, it's called socially responsible investing. It actually gets used in Vermont. Hey, cool stuff. But really big businesses where it gets so big that people can behave like sociopaths and do it in the name of just doing my job. Speaking of which, in today's news, actually yesterday's New York Times, the Bush administration will soon propose significant cuts in Medicare payments for cancer drugs, administration officials said on Tuesday. Doctors who could lose income under the proposal and patients' advocates said the cuts could harm cancer care. Ellen Stovall, president of the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship, hardly a political group. An advocacy group led by cancer survivors said the proposals, quote, the Bush administration proposals, quote, instead of expanding access to life-saving drugs, would limit access to cancer treatments for some of the most seriously ill Medicare beneficiaries. Ah, but we have to pay for the tax cuts for the people who will donate to the Bush campaign. I have here a newspaper. I've been meaning to share this with you for 4 months. It's been sitting here on my desk, and I'm going to do it today. This is from last October's New York Times. I've actually had this sitting in my desk for a long, long time. It's a full-page ad. There's a picture of a guy standing in front of a car. It's just some guy, you know, striped shirt, you know, open collar, middle-aged guy, and his name is Brian Connor, and he says, and there's a big quote in the middle. He says, "As oil companies evolve, they should consider themselves energy sources." That's his quote. And then the entire text for the ad is down on the bottom right-hand side. And a great big full-page ad in the New York Times. It says, "Today we are the source of many energies. In the U.S., we are one of the largest producers of solar panels and the largest producer of natural gas, the cheapest, the cleanest burning fossil fuel. And we're investing in the new energy sources of the future, hydrogen and wind. It's a start." And then down below that, there's a little green starburst, and it says BP. And underneath that, it says Beyond Petroleum. The website is bp.com. Of course, this is British Petroleum, BP. And they are just saying, hey, we realize fossil fuels, limited supply. Fossil fuels, limited supply. Have we strayed so far from the founders' ideas of three separate branches of government that democracy is now at risk? You know, first of all, let's look at the consequences of this. A little more than a month after the attack of 9/11, in his August 6th, now this is a month before 9/11, Bush gets his daily intelligence briefing, and it says, and I quote, this was in the Wall Street Journal, and I quote, "Bush was told that morning of the Al-Qaeda terror network's interest in conducting a strike within the U.S. that might involve hijacked airplanes," end quote. Now, I found it particularly interesting that Tom Ridge, as I recall, said, well, you know, nobody could have expected that airplanes would be hijacked. Now, actually, on August 6th, 2001, George Bush was told explicitly this is going to happen. Why didn't he order the airlines to be alerted? Why didn't he tell the FAA? Why didn't he call the FBI, the CIA, the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization? Why didn't he say, look out? Interesting question. We'll be back to that right after the break. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speech Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, i.e. America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the i.e. America Radio Network.
Though I knew she was sleeping, I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for America.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Back in July of 2002, sorry, August of 2000, August 12th, 2002. A year ago this week, more or less, Time magazine touched on a topic that gets right up to this issue of, have we strayed so far from the founder's idea of three separate branches of government, that three separate and independent branches of government, that democracy itself is now at risk. 9 months before 9/11, they wrote in Time magazine a year ago, the Clinton administration had a bold plan to attack Al-Qaeda before it could attack us. Weakened by the impeachment battle, Clinton put the plan on hold as a courtesy to the incoming Bush administration. In January 2001, the Clinton security team attempted to brief incoming Bush officials of the Al-Qaeda threat and the plan, and were given the brush off. By September of 2001, Time magazine continues, many of those in the know, the spooks, the button-down bureaucrats, the law enforcement professionals in a dozen countries, were almost frantic with worry that a major attack against American interests was imminent. Now, what I find particularly interesting is this national security report, this 9/11 report that was just issued by Congress, where the Bush administration redacted, that is to say, blacked out with felt markers, 28 pages. The little bit of that 28 pages, which says what was reported in the Wall Street Journal on July 24th, the 28 pages that says that Bush was, quote, told the morning of August 6, 2001, a month before 9/11, of the Al-Qaeda terror network's interest in conducting a strike within the U.S. that would involve hijacked airplanes, end quote. That was removed. It was redacted for national security reasons from this 9/11 report that Congress just released. This isn't for national security reasons. This is called cover your butt. And here we have the PNAC, New American Century, Project for a New American Century. Put together in 1997, Robert Kagan, William Kristol, Donald Rumsfeld, Jeb Bush, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz. This guy signed this letter in 1998 to Bill Clinton saying, you got to attack Iraq now. It's important to our security interests. Look at all that oil they got. And in their document that was written in 1998, the guys who came into power with George Bush wrote, and I quote, well, I'll get to the quote in just a second, that in order to convince Americans that it would be necessary to attack Iraq, and that it would be necessary to move money into defense instead of unnecessary expenses like Social Security and Medicare, they said that we would need, and I quote, a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, end quote. And now you understand why on 9/12, George Bush said to Mitch Daniels, I hit the trifecta. Here with the Tom Hartman program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Have we strayed so far from the founder's ideas of three separate branches of government that democracy in America is now at risk? And what can we do about it? Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Laura Miller. Not rain, nor sleet, nor snow can stop the Postal Service from its appointed rounds, but according to the American Postal Workers Union, a government panel just might. This week, Postal Union President William Burris blasted a presidential commission on postal service reform. The commission recommends creating a postal regulatory board whose politically appointed members would have the authority to set postage rates and even open parts of the postal service to competition. The unions also worried proposed changes would undermine the collective bargaining rights of postal employees.
The problems continue for Nigeria's oil industry. In addition to an ongoing peaceful occupation of a pumping station by Nigerian women, four oil workers have been kidnapped in the last month. The latest occurred on Friday. Two of the country's largest refineries are shut down due to renewed ethnic violence in the Delta region and a shortage of fuel oil in the country is becoming so dire that the president of the Nigeria Labor Congress says as many as 500,000 people may be thrown out of work when factories begin running dry. That could start as early as this week. Meanwhile, fuel oil exports continue at an unabated pace.
Whether or not it's legal, 325 nurses in Easton, Pennsylvania are walking a picket line outside Lehigh Valley Hospital this week. Nurses with the United Independent Union struck just after midnight on Monday, fed up with negotiations that have failed to replace a contract which expired 2 months ago. The hospital insists the strike is illegal and has filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board, but the nurses say they gave a 10-day strike notice as required by law. The union says an offer of a 12% wage increase next year isn't enough to offset a rollback in overtime protection, sick days, vacation days, and other benefits.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long, time coming. But I know a change gonna come.
A change is gonna come. Yes, it will. And I believe a change is gonna come in 2004, and if not in 2008, because the times they are a changing. It's just remarkable what I'm hearing. And even in the talk radio world, it's interesting. There's being in this industry, or back in this industry, after being out of it for almost 20 years, I'm now starting to hear from all these folks all around the country who have local, progressive or liberal or whatever you want to call it, talk radio program. It's really quite remarkable. Have we strayed so far from the founder's idea of three separate branches of government? The democracy is now at risk. Our question for the hour, if you'd like to call, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff in Denver's on the line. Welcome to the program, Jeff. Come on in, sit down.
All right, Tom. What I wanted to deal with is, like, one of the reasons... Yes, I do think we've strayed very... Democracy's in danger. We've strayed very far. And one of the reasons we have to be so careful is something called... I call the power of stupidity. I'm writing an article about this right now.
Great.
Stupidity, unfortunately, is much more powerful, it seems, than intelligence. You can destroy a forest fire with one match. One broken mercury thermometer can contaminate an entire lake. We can do massive damaging things instantly with one stupid act, which the Bush administration happens to be doing dozens and dozens and dozens, if not grosses, of these things.
Yeah, it's kind of the power of fractals, yeah. You know. It's...
And, yeah, and you go the other way, like that forest fire you burned down. It's going to take, you know, a century to for forest to come back. It's going to, you know, rebuilding the trade centers. It was an instantaneous act that destroyed them. Rebuilding them will take anything like that. Rebuilding everything of the emotional aspects of it, the international relations.
But, Jeff, why does that have to be stupidity? I mean, couldn't you just as easily say that that's the power of very dangerous evil intellect or something?
Yeah.
You know, I hate using the word evil, but...
Yeah, I hate using the word stupidity, too. I'm looking for another word, so any suggestions are welcome. But the thing is that we can do damaging things so quickly.
Yes.
And the things that really create, you know, heal, that intelligence to, you know, create a system takes a long time. So we must be very careful on anything we do, like the thing with GMO foods. We need to move really slowly. So we need to really get in there and stop what Bush is doing. And, realize it's going to take us a while to heal these things, and it's going to take a while to build a great system. And right now they are doing dangerous experiments that the risks, you know, can go on for centuries.
Yeah, I agree. And the damage that has been done to the environment in this nation, I mean, they're talking about now privatizing the park service. It's it's like it never stops. It's every day there's a brand new outrage where it's, you know, let's take apart the American system and hand it over to corporations who will give us more money for our campaigns so we can hold on to power.
Well, I call it the profitization of America.
Exactly.
And and I just came back from the National Forest and National Parks, and if you were to see how underfunded they are, and Bush, of course, in his typical doublespeak, complained about how they're underfunded while he's funding them less. And, you know, the parks are in desperate need of just basic repair, of, you know, basic infrastructure. They are underfunded in every way of personnel.
I think one of the big problems here, Jeff, is with the parks and with this plan to privatize much of the Pentagon. You know, 800,000 federal employees, not just in the Pentagon, but right across the board, according to this estimate that was released about 4 months ago by the Bush administration, over 800,000 federal employees will be replaced over the next 6 years if Bush gets reelected, and a good chunk of them just over the next year and a half. Will be replaced by private corporate employees, and I think the main impetus here is to do away with good union jobs.
Yes, and like right now in Iraq, I've heard a figure that I don't trust, but a very high percentage, if not the majority of people, apparently in Iraq that are sponsored by the U.S. are private contractors, not... You know,
oh yeah, we're privatizing all sorts of things. There is and to begin with, their oil. I mean, you know, that's on the block.
And I've heard it's the majority.
Actually, there's a bunch of state industries that are being protected right now. 140 of them, as I recall this weekend in the New York Times, only because they employ a couple hundred thousand people. I don't remember the number, and they're concerned that if they throw those people out of work by privatizing those industries, as happened in the Soviet Union when it disintegrated, they'll have the same situation. It'll get so much worse that you'll have, you know, Iraq will turn into another Chechnya. Not that it isn't already going in that direction. Jeff, thanks for the call. Thanks for the comment. I appreciate it. Very kind of you to share your thoughts with us. And Louise says it's the power of profiteering, not just the power of stupidity. And I suppose in that regard, you could say the Ayn Rand folks make a point. You know, the profit can be a powerful motive. The only problem is they all read Atlas Shrugged, and in Atlas Shrugged, all the capitalists were absolutely good guys, and there are a lot of good capitalists out there, but there are also some who will exploit, who will take advantage. So what are some of the things that this administration is doing? Because they're not being overlooked by Congress. The story in the San Diego Union Tribune by James Crawley, Marine Corps fighter pilots and commanders who've returned from the war zone have confirmed dropping dozens of incendiary bombs near bridges over the Saddam Canal and the Tigris River. Now, what's an incendiary bomb? Quote, we napalmed both those bridge approaches, end quote, says Colonel Randolph Ells in a recent interview. He commanded Marine Air Group 11 based in Myanmar Marine Corps Air Station during the war. Quote, unfortunately, he says, this Marine colonel, unfortunately, there were people there because you could see them in the cockpit video. He adds, it was no great way to die. End quote. How many Iraqis died? The military can't say because they're not keeping track. Now, the military says, we're not using napalm. We're using Mark 77 firebombs. Here's the difference. Instead of mixing gasoline, benzene, and a gel to make the stuff stick to your skin, these things use kerosene-based jet fuel and a gel to make it stick to your skin. And they say it's not napalm. John Pike, a defense analyst at globalsecurity.org, says you could call it something other than napalm, but it's napalm. And although it's not illegal to use napalm against military targets, it is, by international law, against the law to drop it on possible civilian targets. However, and I quote, the United States has not agreed to a ban against possible civilian targets, end quote. Here's a photo of the Mark 77 firebomb and the description, manufacturer's description. A firebomb is a thin-skinned container of fuel gel designed for use against dug-in troops, end quote. Although they're using it to bomb bridges and people in cities in Baghdad. Would that be possible with good, strong congressional oversight? I don't know. I mean, why isn't this even coming out? The proof of a meaningful link between Iraq and al-Qaeda has not only been demonstrated that, you know, it has not only not been found, but it's been demonstrated that there is no link. There was no absolute, according to the Central Intelligence Agency, a definitive internal finding. I read it to you yesterday on this program. It was in the news. The CIA says, we have not definite proof that there was no link, but we have not been able to find any evidence whatsoever that there was a link. Can't prove a negative, of course. So what's happened now? Since the war, al-Qaeda has begun to infiltrate Iraq. Or at least that sure seems like what's going on. The Baltimore Sun has an article. Maybe the claim was just premature, that being the claim that there's no al-Qaeda-Iraq connection. Today, the Baltimore Sun says, American troops in Iraq are fighting stalwarts of the old regime as well as foreign insurgents who, according to our top general there, probably include al-Qaeda. Remarkable. The reward for killing an American soldier in June, according to Thomas Ricks, this is a Washington Post staff article, U.S. adopts aggressive tactics on Iraqi fighters. At the beginning of June, the reward paid by these al-Qaeda folks and whatnot, these thugs and murderers, these bums, or you could say these nationalists, right? I guess it depends on what side you're on. I tend to be on our side, but I just cringe every time. You know, McNeil Lehrer report in the evening, they show the picture of whoever got killed, you know, whose picture was most recently released, and they got a moment of silence, and it's just getting tragic. Anyhow, at the beginning of June, the reward on the street, if you killed an American soldier, you'd be paid $300. Now, according to the Washington Post, street youth are being offered, and I quote, street youths are being offered as much as $5,000. This in a nation where a typical salary is $30 a month. So what are we doing? Well, from this Washington Post story, Colonel David Hogg, commander of the 2nd Brigade of the 4th Infantry Division, said tougher methods are being used to gather intelligence. On Wednesday night, he said his troops picked up the wife and daughter of an Iraqi lieutenant general. They left a note, if you want your family released, turn yourself in. We are now kidnapping women and children. Have we strayed so far from the founders' idea of three separate branches of government, that democracy itself is at risk? What kind of harm are we putting ourselves to? The premise behind separation of powers was so well articulated by James Madison in Federalist Number 47. He said, our quote for the day, the accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary. These are the three branches of the government, the legislature, the House and Senate, the executive, the president and his cabinet, and the judiciary, the Supreme Court and the federal court system. The accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands, whether of one, a few, or many, and whether hereditary, self-appointed, or elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. James Madison, Federalist Number 47. The whole premise of the separation of powers was to prevent any group from having unlimited power. This is inefficient. The president, for example, appoints judges and department secretaries. But the Congress, the Senate, has to approve those appointments. The Congress can pass a law, but the president can veto it. The Congress, with the states, can amend the Constitution that the Supreme Court interprets. And they can even go around the Supreme Court by reamending the Constitution. So we have these three branches, and there's this dynamic tension between the three of them that is inefficient. And it's intentional. This idea goes back to ancient Greece. Aristotle thought that the best kind of government would be a mixed government that combined democracy, aristocracy, and monarchy. And that's how the founders first put together the United States. We had democracy in the House of Representatives, which was directly elected. We had aristocracy in the Senate, which was appointed by professional politicians in the state, in the various states, right up until 1917. And we had monarchy in the executive, in the president. That was almost 3,000 years ago. In 1656, in a book called Oceana, a guy named James Harrington says, yeah, we can apply this today. John Locke in 1690, in his second treatise on civil government, suggested that there should be at least an executive and a legislative branch of government. And Montague in 1748, in the spirit of the laws, expanded on that, adding a judiciary. And the founders read this stuff. They were no dummies. They said, this is a good idea. Senator Robert Byrd quoted Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, when he was a state representative, as you may recall, was strongly opposed to then-President Polk waging war with Mexico. And Lincoln, commenting about Polk's war with Mexico that was not supported by a declaration of war from Congress, at least initially. I don't frankly recall if they got around to it, but I know when this thing started, there wasn't. Lincoln wrote a letter to a friend of his, William Herndon, and in that letter he said, the provision of the Constitution giving the war-making power to Congress was dictated, as I understand it, by the following reasons. Kings had always been involved in impoverishing their people in wars, pretending generally, if not always, that the good of the people was the object of those wars. This, our Constitutional Convention understood, to be the most oppressive of the kingly oppressions. And they resolved to so frame the Constitution that no one man should hold the power of bringing this oppression upon us. Now, his friend Herndon, that he wrote this letter to, was in favor of Polk declaring the war, and so Lincoln adds to this, he says, but your view destroys the whole matter and places our president where kings have always stood. Or as Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis wrote in 1926, the doctrine of the separation of powers was adopted not to promote efficiency, but to prevent the exercise of arbitrary power. And now we have on Meet the Press on Sunday, Secretary of the, Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, talking to Tim Russert. And he says, well, again, Tim, we inherited a situation post-9/11. We inherited a situation post-9/11? He's just stuck on this. You know, you talk about the economy. Well, we inherited the economy. Anything bad, they just, these guys involuntarily use the word inherited because it's a blame everything on Clinton is their mantra. But anyhow, he says, well, Tim, we inherited a situation post 9/11 where we have to rethink our relationship between levels of government. I guess one of the challenges we have to understand is that our job is, first of all, to reduce risk because the risk, then he pauses and he says, the president intuitively realized we are at war. It is a permanent condition. That's why we've made permanent changes in the government. Says Tom Ridge. Gotta read 1984 by George Orwell. It's all there. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here again to tell you about InPhone. I hate asking people for directions. It's embarrassing. So instead, I call InPhone. And the nice operator at InPhone gives me driving directions, phone numbers, movie times, or restaurant reservations. So cling to your independence like I do. Call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Jesse sent you. Call now. InPhone. How can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer at the briefing today.
The job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap.
How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad?
Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
All righty then.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, did you ever take a walk through the forest? Stop and dream a while among the trees. Well, you can look up through the leaves right straight to heaven. And you can almost hear the voice of God in each and every breeze. But you got to stop.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Have we strayed so far from the founders' ideas of three separate branches of government, separate and independent, that democracy is now at risk? The point of this is that the whole idea of creating these three separate branches of government, of having a separation of powers, was to incite debate. If the United States is at war, that means you're at war, and I am at war. We are this nation. We are, our government is us. It exists by virtue of our consent, by virtue of the consent of the governed. And if you and I, well, I can't speak for you, but I can speak for me. If I'm going to go off to war, I'd like to have a reasonable discussion about it first. I think that's fair. I'd like to know in advance if we're going to be using nuclear waste for our bullets. And 150,000 of our soldiers are going to inhale this stuff and bring it home. And not to mention the millions of people in another nation who are going to be contaminated by it. I'd like to know if we're using napalm. I'd like to know if we're kidnapping non-combatants, civilian women and children. I'd like to have the truth. And I'd like to have an open and honest debate about that. And when Congress handed a blank check to George Bush to go get the oil in Iraq, because that's the only thing we've gotten so far, we did not protect the nuclear facilities. I mean, here's an article in today's the Sunday Herald, this was on Sunday. Pure uranium oxide that could be used for making a nuclear bomb is on sale in Basra in the souk. That's like the market for $250,000. We must have a forum for these discussions, and this is required by the separation of powers doctrine. Change things in 2004. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. I'll be back in just a few moments.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Yes, I'm calling about
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. New security measures are now being put in place after yesterday's deadly car bomb attack on a Marriott hotel in Jakarta, Indonesia. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Marty Natalegawa says officials are meeting today to discuss how to further enhance security.
I think there is just a general sense of a general need for all of us, Indonesians, expatriates, whomever alike, to enhance to raise our a sense of security.
Guards have now started checking cars before they enter some areas, and police have also been randomly pulling over vehicles to be searched. They've also stepped up security around local buildings and especially government offices. The U.S. Embassy in Indonesia says the blast is a reminder to exercise, quote, rigorous security practices while traveling to that nation. 16 people were killed in yesterday's bombing. 100 others were injured, including 2 Americans. Pressure is mounting on Liberian President Charles Taylor to follow up on his promise to leave the country as West African peacekeepers continue arriving. Taylor had pledged to step down and go into exile once the international forces took over. But as we hear from correspondent Suzanne Chislett, Taylor may have now changed his mind.
Charles Taylor agreed to quit office and Liberia to end the ongoing fighting between government and rebel forces. But reports from the capital, Monrovia, now suggest the recent lull in street combat may be behind a decision to rethink the move. South African President Thabo Mbeki said on Tuesday Mr. Taylor told him by phone he would leave for Nigeria within a day of standing down on August the 11th. But a senior official in Nigeria now says Mr. Taylor appears unwilling to accept the country's offer of asylum. Suzanne Chislett reporting.
American Marines, meanwhile, could be landing very soon in Liberia. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has authorized a small number of Marines to leave their ships currently docked off the Liberian coast to help establish that force of West African peacekeepers. President Bush made the decision yesterday, authorizing U.S. troop deployment in country. They could be on the ground today.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... You're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The new Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire says he won't feel responsible if his installment causes a split between the Anglican and Episcopal churches. V. Gene Robinson is the first ever openly gay Episcopal bishop, and his election has caused a furor among conservatives both in the U.S. and Great Britain. Two former America West pilots have been cleared of charges in Florida. They tried to fly a passenger jet from Miami to Phoenix last year while drunk. A Florida federal judge yesterday said Thomas Cloyd and Christopher Hughes can't be prosecuted on state charges of operating a plane while drunk because the federal government has jurisdiction.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone.
The European Union is now accusing Microsoft of breaking competition laws by trying to monopolize markets for server software and audiovisual players. The EU, which has actually been investigating the computer giant for 4 years, is giving the company a last chance to defend itself, or it will demand changes in its Windows operating system. That story from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
The European Union accuses Microsoft of unfairly imposing the overwhelmingly dominant position Windows has in personal computers into the market for servers, which tie those desktop computers together. It also alleges that Microsoft's inclusion of a Windows media player in the Windows operating system hurts competing audiovisual software, such as Apple's QuickTime and Real Networks. EU Competition Commissioner Mario Monti has sent a list of possible remedies to Microsoft and says the firm must either offer a version of Windows with without the media player, or agree to carry rival players with Windows. Alistair Wanklin, London.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. What could the Lost in Space robot and Star Wars R2-D2 have in common with a phenomenon called dieseling? Will Robinson and Luke Skywalker know, and when I come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
Just like Will and Luke have some far-fetched friends to warn them of impending danger, your car has ways to warn you of the impending danger of neglected maintenance. One tune-up red flag is dieseling. Known as afterrun, dieseling occurs when an engine chugs on after the ignition is turned off. Causes? Inferior gas, excessive idle speed, and carbon in the combustion chamber. Dieseling is just one warning that, if neglected, may leave you lost in space. The space alongside the road. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us! Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. Oh, what a beautiful day it is. All across the nation. Any day that, you know, what did the... Back when I learned how to fly, my flight instructor used to say, any landing you walk away from is a good... Any day that we're still breathing is a good day. Boy, is it nice to be alive. What a gift. What an extraordinary gift. James Madison isn't around to enjoy it, but he certainly had an opinion about his time then and our time now. He said, the accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands, whether of one, a few, or many, and whether hereditary, self-appointed... or even elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. Now, we have to acknowledge this was the point that many Republicans were making in the late 1930s and early 1940s as FDR was packing the Supreme Court and the Democrats-controlled Congress. And I would say there were some excesses, some significant excesses during the Roosevelt administration, although there were also some very fine things that happened, but no president in history has been without errors and mistakes. But today, we have reached a point where this single worldview, and it's not even a Republican or a Democratic worldview, it's this neoconservative has taken over these right-wing extremists are attempting a coup of our judicial system through the Federalist Society, which is working to get right-wing judges on courts all across the United States, pro-corporate judges, that is working to seize control of the legislature and has taken the executive branch. Andy Borowitz, Oh, our question for this hour, we're going to get into this. Will repealing NAFTA and the World Trade Organization help or harm our economy? Interesting question. I mean, this is pretty deep stuff. So first, let me share with you Andy Borowitz. Andy Borowitz, B-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z, from BorowitzReport.com. White House releases, this is tongue-in-cheek here, White House releases redacted version of Constitution. The White House today released an edited version of the U.S. Constitution minus 28 pages that were deemed too sensitive to be shared with the American public. The altered document was hand-redacted by Attorney General John Ashcroft using a Marxalot magic marker, the White House said, with the goal of removing the 94% of the original Constitution that could have adversely impacted national security. In an unofficial statement, the White House commended the changes, saying, quote, "The redacted version of the United States Constitution is not only a much safer document, it is also a much quicker read," end quote. At first glance, the edited version of the historic document appeared to be missing some of its memorable passages, including the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. In the newly redacted version, the Second Amendment, protecting the right to bear arms, climbs up a notch to become the new First Amendment, quote, "where it should have been in the first place," end quote, Mr. Ashcroft said. President Bush, speaking to the nation about the changes to the Constitution, read from a redacted speech that had over 20,000 words excised from its text, leaving only 16 words intact. Moments after delivering the speech, however, Mr. Bush disowned responsibility for those 16 words, saying, "I have no idea how they got in there." The White House later released a copy of the controversial 16-word speech with all 16 words blacked out. In other news, on Wall Street today, shares of the Avery Corporation soared on news of increased demand for its popular Marxalot magic markers. Thanks to Andy Borowitz and BorowitzReport.com. House GOP expects final energy bill will be more to its liking. The grand old party, a.k.a. corporate America, very large corporate America. Certainly not the Republicans, as much as so many people believe that they do. The Republicans do not represent the interests of small businesses in America. And I say this as the owner of a small business, as a small business person for nearly 30 years. They are working against the interests of small businesses in America, as are many of the Democrats, by the way. But anyhow, the GOP, there's this article by Joseph Herber in the Associated Press. House GOP expects final energy bill will be more to its liking. This energy bill will provide $16 billion. And that's more than all of our foreign aid. I think that's more than our entire foreign aid budget. Our entire foreign aid budget is either $16 or $18 billion. I'll have to look it up, or somebody can correct me on that. But it's right in the neighborhood of all of our foreign aid. All the money we give Israel and Egypt, which are the two largest recipients of our foreign aid, largesse, and all other nations in the world, we're going to give that much money to the oil and coal industry to, quote, "promote energy production," end quote. Additionally, there will be money to the oil and gas industry to spur production of a natural gas pipeline in Alaska. Additionally, they intend to rescind what they call a Depression-era law. You know, you say Depression-era like, you know, oh, it has to do with the Depression. It's not useful anymore. No, it's just been a law on the books for 50 years that restricted the merger of utility holding companies. Now, utility holding companies are themselves mergers. In other words, they're going to blow off one of the last antitrust protections in the energy industry. So they've got you. They can do like they did to California, charge you anything they want. Laugh all the way to the bank. And the House directed oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Atlanta be part of the new bill. This $18.7 billion tax package approved by the House funneled two-thirds of its money to fossil fuel energy development. Now, British Petroleum figured this out, as I shared with you in the first hour, that ad by, they call Beyond Petroleum now, BP. But the United States Congress, still scratching their heads. How does this work? Also in the news, just a couple of quickies here. Al Gore, tomorrow he's going to speak to MoveOn.org in New York City. That'll be interesting. He actually solicited this thing. He went to them and he said, I'd like to talk to your people. Which, of course, has caused a whole bunch of people to say, Al Gore must be getting ready to run for president. I doubt it. I think he's just, you know, he's been biting his tongue for almost 3 years, and I think he's ready to say, hey, I told you so. But we'll see. And in the California race, Arianna Huffington, perhaps even now. I got an email from her, I think yesterday or the day before, it was part of one of these mass emails, saying, I would love it if you would join me as I make the leap from analysis to action, from columnist to candidate. I can't quite do her Greek accent. She's apparently going to run for governor of California and is announcing it today at a restaurant in Los Angeles area. Be interesting to see what comes of that. And another one, my old friend Larry Flint. long story. Anyhow, smut peddler who cares. Larry Flint, he describes himself as the smut peddler who cares. And people say, oh, this is just a publicity stunt. You're running for governor of California. He says, I don't need any publicity. I'm better known than Coca-Cola. And he actually has a platform. This is from the San Francisco Gate. Flint said he would expand the right of casinos to operate slot machines, taxing them at a 30% rate. He said would raise an additional $3 billion a year. He said he'd use the money to finance a multi-billion dollar bond issue to close the state's deficit, and he claimed maintain state services. He also has a legislative agenda. He wants to make drugs and prostitution legal, which he says will reduce crime, reduce the amount of money spent on prisons, and raise tax revenue for the state. It certainly has done all those things in Holland. Whether it could work in the United States or not is a whole other issue for some other show. He also advocates, or another time, rather, he also advocates declaring amnesty for all illegal immigrants and then sealing the borders to prevent any further inflow. Good luck on that, Larry. If his pollsters determine he would have a reasonable chance of winning the election, he is prepared to spend millions to finance a statewide campaign. I'm prepared to go the distance, he said, emphasizing that as a man of independent wealth, there's one thing for sure, I can't be bought. And that is true. Okay, the Democrats, speaking before the AFL-CIO, this is from the Associated Press. The nine Democratic presidential contenders railed against President Bush's policies on jobs, education, and corporate accountability as they courted the AFL-CIO endorsement. Keep in mind, by the way, I just want to emphasize this. One of the few things, I mean, it's so easy to put down unions. It's so, everybody's got a story, right? You know, the guy who makes $16 an hour to turn on and off the machine. Everybody's got a story about union absurdities. But the reality is, I mean, everybody has a story about government absurdities, and if you scratch the thinnest surface, everybody has stories about corporate absurdities. The reality is that the only reason that there is a minimum wage in the United States is because of the unions, that the only thing that stands between you and me and absolute corporate feudalism, neo-feudalism, an absolute takeover by a corporate aristocracy in the United States, are the unions in this nation. I'm very concerned about the collapse of unionization in the United States. So so much of it is being driven by the fact that they are shipping all these jobs, all these manufacturing jobs overseas, and this administration is trying to privatize 800,000 federal employees who are all union members and replace them with non-union contractors and independent contractors, individuals and employees of corporations who hire non-unionized people. And they're explicit about it. I mean, Robert Novak on Crossfire, he can't say the word teacher without saying unionized before it, as if he's spitting. So So anyhow, the Democrats go to the union, the AFL-CIO, the unions, the AFL-CIO, on Tuesday. Crucial to union workers who typically vote Democratic has been free trade agreements that proponents argue expand the market for American-made goods, but foes complain send U.S. manufacturing jobs overseas. Now, what's the solution to our jobs going overseas? What can be done? How can that be changed? What about repealing NAFTA and WTO? Could that be done? Would it harm the United States? Will it throw us into another depression? We'll talk about that right after this break. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
For Boeing, Inc., it was a steal of a deal, wrapped in the flag and delivered on a silver platter. The deal, initiated by Boeing lobbyists shortly after the September 11th terrorist attacks, lets the world's largest airplane maker lease 100 of its commercial jets to the Air Force for conversion into refueling tankers. The lease pays a sweet $20 billion to Boeing, way more than the Air Force would pay simply to buy the tankers. It was a closed-door deal, done without competing bids and without congressional hearings or a vote. Oh, it also includes a 15% profit for Boeing, triple what it makes selling commercial planes. How did this greasy gob of corporate welfare come about? Business Week magazine recently followed the lobbying trail. First, Boeing went to the top, having just moved its corporate headquarters to Illinois, home state of House Speaker Dennis Hastert, its lobbyists quickly signed up Hastert, and he quietly slipped the arrangement into the Pentagon appropriations bill. But the White House Budget Office balked, calling the costly lease scheme irresponsible. So, Boeing's lobbyists, Hastert's office, and the Air Force agreed to a bit of Enron accounting to make the lease appear less costly than it is. In other words, they rigged the numbers. Then they lobbied. Boeing spends some $6 million a year on lobbyists. It's also a $2 million annual political contributor, including having given $100,000 to help pay for Bush's inaugural festivities. So it has lots of insider clout. Hastert himself worked the White House and got private sessions to pitch the lease directly to George W. After one of these sessions, Bush turned to his chief of staff and said, "Andy, let's get it done." This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that shortly after the deal was done, Boeing hired the Air Force procurement official who had negotiated this taxpayer giveaway? And that, my friends, is how corporate welfare gets delivered in Washington.
is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Will repealing NAFTA and WTO help or harm our economy? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have thoughts, opinions, or questions, John in Long Beach, California is on the line.
Welcome, John.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Hey, John.
If I may elaborate a little bit.
Please.
Okay, first thing that has to be done, personhood has to be taken away from corporations.
I agree. I wrote a book about
thing.
That.
The second thing is NAFTA has to be done away with. Yep. I believe in fair trade, not free trade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't mind if an American company invests in a company that's already established overseas. That's one thing. But when they take their company and they open up that company and move it to Mexico or wherever and then compete with other companies here, that's not right.
Well, John, the way you handle this is not by regulating where companies can put their money, but rather regulating, this is through a device called a tariff, which is basically an import tax or an export tax.
Well, that too, yes.
By using tariffs.
If I may interrupt here.
Sure.
A individual is expected to have a fidelity, a certain amount of fidelity towards his country, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Then why isn't that same thing applied to a corporation?
Oh, I know. The Democrats had tried to put a rider on one of the spending bills last year that said that any company that had reincorporated in Bermuda specifically to avoid taxes was not eligible to do the reparation work in Iraq because, you know, it's our tax dollars that are paying for it.
Yeah.
And, of course, Halliburton has all these, under Dick Cheney, set up all of these offshore Bahamian and Bermudian tax haven corporations, and the Republicans fought that, and they won, of course, because they control a majority. So,
well,
yeah,
another thing,
right.
too, is that if a company relocates to another area, say, like even Arizona, well, I can't say that that wouldn't apply, but if they were to relocate to China or to Mexico, wherever, because they can get cheap labor, then they should be treated as a foreign entity.
Well, I'd say as long as it's happening within the United States, then that's a trend that you just pretty much can't stop. I mean, there have been migrations of labor, for example, down to the South, where labor was relatively cheap in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then what happened is it raised the standard of living in the South to the point where labor got just as expensive as it was in the North, and ultimately it all balanced out. But that's within the boundaries of the United States.
Exactly.
When you throw the United States workers into competition with people in the Third World who are willing to work for a dollar a day, there's no way it's ever going to balance out.
Exactly. That's what I really meant to say was anything outside the United States where the company relocates purposely to make a bigger profit at
right.
the expense of American citizens.
There has to be a way to protect the people of the United States. That's the purpose of the federal government.
Yeah, and they should be treated as a foreign entity.
Yes.
Otherwise, I don't know.
Or at least their goods should be.
How many things that happen? Do you still have, if a company in Japan, for instance, when they send stuff here, are they still under a high tariff?
No, well, that's the whole thing of NAFTA and GATT. Well, NAFTA not with Japan, that's with Canada and Mexico, but with the GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, which created the World Trade Organization and all the rules that had to do with that, basically struck down thousands of rules that had to do with and taxes that were imposed on the importation of foreign goods and just, you know, kicked the doors open, made it possible for us to ship jobs overseas very, very quickly. John, that music there, we're up against a break. thanks for your call and your comment. I appreciate it. NAFTA is what NAFTA and GATT brought this about. Should we repeal them? Let's get into this. What happened with the Great Depression? Did Smoot-Hawley cause it? There's some real scare tactics going on the right around this. Let's address them head on. You're in the Democracy Zone. I'm Tom Hartman.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's the season for Lyme disease, and people should take measures to avoid getting sick. I'm Jill Ladwig for Earthwatch Radio. It's the time of year to be on the lookout for Lyme disease, a potentially debilitating illness carried by tiny deer ticks. The disease is concentrated in the Northeast, Upper Midwest, and Pacific Northwest, but cases have been reported in almost every state. Jonathan Edlow is an emergency medicine specialist at Harvard Medical School and author of a new book on Lyme disease called Bullseye.
I think the most important thing is just to know about the disease, to try to avoid tick exposure when one can, but the reality is people can pick up Lyme disease in their own backyards. There are certain insect repellents, doing tick checks when you come back indoors to make sure that if there is a tick, you remove it before it can transmit Lyme disease, and then just to know what the symptoms are so that if you're developing those symptoms, you can be treated early, because early treatment of Lyme disease is very successful.
Edlow says the infection is caused by bacteria transmitted by tick bites. It often starts with a bullseye-shaped rash, usually within a week or two.
In the first stage, most people will develop a low-grade fever, and about 80% will develop a very distinctive rash called erythema migrans. And this is a very large red rash that's in unusual areas of the body, such as in the armpit or in the groin or on the torso.
For the victims who don't get the rash, diagnosis is more difficult. Edlow says they usually develop a low-grade fever and flu-like symptoms, including fatigue, headache, and joint pain. The good news is that antibiotics cure Lyme disease in the early stages, but left unchecked, the disease can cause chronic problems with the nervous system, heart, joints, and other parts of the body. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
And Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Would repealing NAFTA and the World Trade Organization help or harm our economy? Would it cause a new depression? Well, first of all, let's look at this. The suggestions that John had made, and one of the folks in our chat room had suggested, well, you just require companies, if they're going to move jobs overseas, to pay twice the U.S. minimum wage. The problem with micromanaging the behavior of another company is that there's just no end to it, number one. And number two, there's always people who will find a way around it. And number three, it's really not the business of the government to be telling companies how to be conducting themselves, as long as it's legal what they're doing, broadly, particularly how they're conducting themselves outside the United States. But it is appropriate to say if a product is manufactured in a country where the labor cost is 25 cents, and a similar product manufactured in the United States would have a labor cost of $20 to $25, then we will impose a $24.75 tax on that product when it's imported into the United States so that ultimately the labor cost is functionally the same. And we'll use that $24.75. Now, see, the manufacturer is basically their cost to manufacture in the United States or their cost to manufacture overseas then becomes identical. And so it's in their interest to save the shipping cost and keep the jobs here. But if they decide to go over there and make the stuff, we'll take that tax and we'll use it to create an environment in the United States where other businesses can also create jobs so that somebody will be able to earn a living, even though that job has been exported. Now, this goes back to the 1780s. I read over the weekend the biography of Tench Cox, T-E-N-C-H-C-O-X-E, a book called Tench Cox and the Early Republic by Jacob E. Cook. Tench Cox was one of the founders of this country. Good friend of Thomas Jefferson's and of George Washington's and of James Madison's. Actually got in some significant battles with both Jefferson and Hamilton. He was, before the Revolution, opposed to it. During the Revolution, during the first half of the Revolution, opposed to it. Ended up in favor of he had all these different positions. He was a businessman. And he made a very good living over the years. And around 1800... this was just, 15 years after the end of the Revolutionary War, more or less, he got into government. And his whole thing in the years that he was in government in the United States was to aggressively promote what I'm describing, what he called tariffs. For example, the East India Company was importing cotton into the United States. And Tench Cox said that, and I quote, "To prevent a competition of a people who live without animal food and are hired for a few cents a day, I recommend that Congress promptly prohibit the importation of all foreign cotton goods," or, I don't have the rest of the quote here, but "or impose a tariff on it, on the abstract principle that industry left to pursue its own course will find its own interest. That is, it with the proper incentives," he said. Tariff legislation of 1816 was his work, followed the Treaty of Ghent. And it was based on, the duties ranged from 7.5 to 30%. And most gratifying to Cox, provided protection against the competition of coarse East Indian fabrics by stipulating that all cotton goods, however cheap, would be minimally valued at 25 cents a square yard, which reflected the cost of manufacture here in the United States. Not only were the bill's specific schedules a validation of policies he consistently advocated, but they also represented a cardinal tenet of his economic thought, as John C. Calhoun. I mean, there was a lot of these guys back then were what you would today call protectionists. They were fair traders, not free traders. They said, if somebody wants to make something outside the United States, we want to protect our industries. Somebody wants to make something outside the United States, then we're going to tax it to the point that at least there's a level playing field. Well, then the cons come along and they say, oh, you're saying that you want people to pay more for their stuff. And people, for some reason, liberals freeze like deer in headlights when conservatives say this. Are you want the cost of all that stuff at Walmart to go up 20%? That 1995 CD player suddenly going to cost $26, maybe $30, maybe $35, maybe $40? Here's the answer. Sure, I'll pay that if that means that I can have a good union job and have good, you know, be making $15, $20, $30 an hour, whatever is an appropriate salary, an appropriate wage in this country, plus have health benefits, plus have retirement package. Sure, I'll pay more for things. I'll be able to. If we keep our labor here in the United States. I'd be glad to pay more. Because I'll be earning more. But you're gonna you know, Smoot Hawley, they start sputtering. Smoot Hawley caused the Great Depression. I've actually heard Kahn say that. Smoot Hawley was a piece of legislation passed in 1930, signed into law by Herbert Hoover in the last year of his, was it 30? No, it was 32 that what's his name came in, Roosevelt. Anyhow, in 1930, Herbert Hoover signed into law the Smoot-Hawley bill, which placed 40 to 60% tariffs on imported goods. And there, it's really interesting. The Great Depression is like a giant Rorschach test. You know, back in the 1960s, we had all these monetary-based economists. Everybody was into, you know, monetary policy controls everything. That is, you know, controlling the supply of cash. And so the theory in the 60s that was most widely accepted was that the Great Depression was a result of the Fed screwing things up. The Fed came into being, as I recall, in 1913. So it was monetary policy. The equivalent of Alan Greenspan back then blew it. That was in the 60s. In the 70s, after the neo-Keynesian synthesis, after John Maynard Keynes and Keynes, I think it's pronounced, they rewrote this the history to say, no, it has to do with consumption and investment spending, reflecting the economic fad of that day. In the 1980s, everybody was looking at international trade and said, oh, it must have had to do with international trade. And that got well imprinted. There's a lot of people, particularly baby boomers, who were kind of paying attention in the 80s. I think a lot of them are in Congress now. Who came to believe that our trade with other countries and the failure of our trade with other countries was what caused the Great Depression. And then in the 1990s, we were back to the idea that that it was a banking crisis, not necessarily the central bank. What was it that caused the Great Depression? Well, in a nutshell, the Great Depression was caused by a bubble economy that had to do with the stock market, and most significantly, by a radical disequilibrium in the distribution of wealth in the United States. According to a study done by the Brookings Institution, in 1929, the top one-tenth of 1% of Americans. This is from Main Causes of the Great Depression by Paul Alexander Gusmorino III. In 1929, the top one-tenth of 1% of Americans had a combined income equal to the bottom 42%. They controlled 34% of all savings, while 80% of Americans, 4 out of 5, had no savings whatsoever. And then we see in the period from 1923 to 29, output per worker increased 32%, while wages only went up 8%. Now, these are very similar numbers to what we're seeing over the last 10 to 15 years in the United States. We have seen a steady decline in average worker incomes since 1973. It really picked up steam in the 80s during the first Reagan-Bush revolution. And then paused for a while. Now it's going full tilt boogie again. From 23 to 29, corporate profits rose 62%. Dividends were up 65%. Giant tax cut, 1926, the Revenue Act of 1926, pushed through by Andrew Mellon, President Coolidge's Secretary of the Treasury, that cut the amount of tax that somebody with $1 million annual income, now keep in mind, $1 million annual income in 1929 was the equivalent of about a $500 million income today. Somebody who made $1 million back then would have paid $600,000 in taxes, and in 1926, Coolidge cut that to $200,000. So it was a 40% reduction in taxes on the wealthy. This allowed, from 1926 to 1929, for the wealthy to get vastly more wealthy. And what happened was that this teetering, tottering, giant, it's like an upside-down pyramid, you know, tottering on its point, and it fell over. The bubble was driven by something very similar to the Internet bubble, and that was radio. Radio and cars. Those were the two industries that exploded. Cars started it, and then radio picked up in the early 1920s. RCA, if you look at RCA, at a graph of RCA's stock during the 10 years of the 1920s and compare it with a graph of AOL's stock during the 10 years of the 1990s, they're almost identical. RCA just exploded because everybody was getting radios. And along with this was the idea that you can buy it now and pay for it later, which was unheard of before. Back in the 19th century, in the 1800s, and in the 1700s in the United States, if somebody was in debt, that was considered a moral failure. People saved up to buy their houses. They saved up to buy everything. And consumer credit, the idea that individual consumers could and should borrow to buy something, really came about in the United States in the 1920s. It was applied both to automobiles and to radios. Principally radios. Radios actually started it. People would borrow to buy, they'd buy their radios on time. And what happened was so many people were so far in debt for the car and radio that they'd bought that when things started spiraling down, they just spiraled out of control. So we saw this just massive contraction. Now, against this, in 1930, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act was passed. Now, here's what the U.S. Department of State says about it. And I'm going to point out to you how this is wrong, or what's wrong about this. But anyhow, they say, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of June 1930 raised U.S. tariffs to historically high levels. That's true. During the 1928 election campaign, Republican president candidate Herbert Hoover pledged to help the beleaguered farmer by, among other things, raising tariff levels on agricultural products. But once the tariff schedule revision process got started, it proved impossible to stop. Calls for increased protection flooded in from industrial sector special interest groups, and soon a bill meant to provide relief for farmers became a means to raise tariffs in all sectors of the economy. Also true. The Smoot-Hawley tariff was more a consequence of the onset of the Great Depression than an initial cause. Also true. But it provoked a storm of foreign retaliatory measures and came to stand as a symbol of the beggar thy neighbor policies of the 1930s. Also true. Then they say, such policies contributed to a drastic decline in international trade. For example, U.S. imports from Europe declined from a 1929 high of $1.334 million, to just $390 million in 1932. Overall world trade declined by 66% between 1929 and 1934. When you look at the numbers, though, you discover that the Smoot-Hawley tariffs only represented an effective tax of 2.4%. But the Great Depression represented a 3.1% drop in GNP. So, you know, it was a small factor, but it was really no big deal. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937. And Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Billy, do you think repealing NAFTA and the World Trade Organization will help or harm our economy?
Actually, I think it'll hurt the economy. I think it's walking backwards.
Okay. Why?
Why? Well, I mean, I just think that Fortress America is not the way to go. I do understand that we are going to lose our manufacturing base to the third world countries. But what is the choice? What's the other choice?
The choice is to go back to pre-1996 and in some ways pre-1980 policies. I mean, we had from the passage of Smoot-Hawley and essentially from 1932 up until 1973 and 1980, let's say, we had the greatest sustained growth of the middle class in this country in its history.
What? Give me those dates again.
from 1932, the bottom year of the Depression,
right,
continuously climbed right up until more or less 1980.
Right.
And then it started to collapse again. And
right.
The reason why was because we had, number one, we had relatively high taxes on the very wealthy, so that there weren't these enormous aggregations of wealth, which was keeping cash out of circulation and out of the economy. Number two, we had government policy that was protecting our domestic industries, where we were saying, if you want to ship a job overseas, that's fine, but we're gonna charge a tax when you import the product that's going to make up for the savings that you're getting on the cheaper labor over there. So you might as well use our labor here.
Yeah, but
and when Reagan started kicking
that just doesn't really make sense, does it?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's
well,
been, it's,
in other words,
this is how this country has been run since 1873.
Well, see, here's the deal.
Sorry, 1773.
Let me talk about manias for a minute and get back to this.
Okay, we've only got about 30 seconds here, Billy, in this break.
Oh my God, it's just not enough time because
well, if you want to hang on, if you want to hang on over the commercial break, you can
right,
give us something a little longer.
One of the things you try
got about
to do,
10 seconds.
And you're right about it, let's warn the public that during a mania, they will never make the money in the final analysis. And I'll say why on the other side of the commercial.
Okay, great. Hang on to that thought, Billy. You're with Tom Hartman, where democracy is still alive and well here on the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
You check the batteries in your smoke detector and the air in your tires to protect your family. But how about your credit report? Experts recommend you check it regularly, too. And FreeCreditReport.com makes it easy. Log on today, and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report. A surprise on your credit report could cause you to be turned down for a loan or a credit card. See your credit report online instantly. Make sure you get the credit you deserve with FreeCreditReport.com.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Xie xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Ban ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Ban ji la.
You know everything.
Xie xie.
I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda!
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. All right, boys, come on.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left, and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over to the side of the road to speak with you. I read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling the 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You know, when things are a little more expensive to make, you have a repair industry. I remember getting shoes fixed. I remember getting radios fixed. I remember TVs being fixed. All sorts of things. Anyhow, Billy, you were talking about manias. Why don't you finish your thought there? You know about the Dutch tulip mania.
Absolutely. You know, that's, manias are about the public actually getting in on something where before businessmen were doing it, and it happens to the public because they get involved in the future. You see, we can only overpay for the future. We never overpay for the present. You know, the future recently was the year 2000 and the internet at the same moment. You know, the year 2000 was all about looking forward and getting excited about, you know, the next millennium. And it was pretty clear to anyone who looked that the internet was the rocket fuel that was going to take the computer revolution to a whole new level. Those things are true. But the mistake that we make as the public is to think that we are going to be able to get rich off of those sorts of manias.
Well, it's the same thing that drives lotteries. You know, I mean, it's the gambling thing. It's
exactly. And the house always wins.
Right.
There even was actually, if they have to cheat you to do it.
There was a state.
That's what happens when the reality of the future gets involved with the public's interest in a market. So that's just a warning, you know, for the future.
Yeah. Okay. Good one. Thank you, Billy. There was I appreciate the call and the comment, and I agree with you. You're spot on. There was actually I've been looking for this news story because I think I heard it. I'm not sure where. There was actually a legislator who introduced a bill into a state Congress to buy lottery tickets from a nearby state with the proceeds to go to that state's treasury, that is, to the state that was buying the tickets. In other words, this guy thought that the way he was going to bail out his state's deficit was by buying lottery tickets. Incredible, eh? Anyhow, will repealing NAFTA and the World Trade Organization help or harm our economy? I am suggesting it will help our economy because spending in the United States is driven by the middle class. The middle class is vanishing. There's less spending going on, less goods being purchased, and fewer goods being manufactured because people don't have the jobs they used to have. If we were to go back to protecting our domestic industries, I realize this is heresy. People point to Smoot-Hawley, but when you look at the numbers, Smoot-Hawley did not cause the Great Depression. It had nothing to do with it. And we have been protecting industries in the United States from the founding of this country up until just the past 10 or 15 years. And look at where it's gotten us, abandoning that 200-year policy. Uncommon sense in the radical middle. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. American troops could be on the ground in Liberia as soon as today, after President Bush made the decision yesterday authorizing U.S. forces be deployed there, that at least according to a report in USA Today. The president's on a month-long vacation at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, and says he made his decision after meeting with Pentagon officials. Deploying U.S. forces could then clear the way for international peacekeepers to move into Liberia. The USS Iwo Jima and USS Carter Hall have been positioned off the coast of West Africa since Monday. Saudi Arabia still wants to see the classified section of a recently released congressional report on events leading up to the September 11th attacks. That portion deals with the suspected involvement of foreign governments with those who carried out the attacks. Saudi foreign policy advisor Adel El-Jabbar says it's important for his country to know if it's been implicated in those attacks.
We want to find out who the terrorists are, who the people are, if there are any links, and if there's any misinformation, we want to clarify that. And that's why we went to the president asking that the 28 pages be released. He decided that this was not the time to do so.
President Bush denied the request because he claims declassifying the document would put current investigations in jeopardy. Yesterday, Saudi officials allowed the FBI to question a Saudi citizen about his friendship with two of the alleged hijackers. Omar al-Bayoumi has been identified as a likely Saudi intelligence agent by a congressional investigation. Israel has released more than 300 Palestinian prisoners today. The Palestinian officials are dismissing the move as a sham. A bus carrying some of the former prisoners arrived at a checkpoint outside the West Bank town of Batunia earlier. The first one off the bus flashed a V for victory sign while others knelt and kissed the ground before being reunited with their family and friends. Right-wing Israelis as well as relatives of victims of Palestinian suicide bombings had opposed the decision to free any of the prisoners, despite the fact none of those released today were directly involved in any attacks on Israel. Palestinians regard the prisoners as heroes of their nationalistic cause and have demanded amnesty for all 6,000 prisoners being held. One Palestinian cabinet minister said today's gesture is worthless and a meaningless theatrical step.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The nation's largest wildfire has now charged about 77,000 acres of timber and brush in Washington. The Fawn Peak Farewell Creek Fire Complex was ignited by lightning strike June 29th. A red flag warning has been issued for the area due to the potential for more lightning. The death toll, meanwhile, has climbed to 14 as wildfires continue raging across Portugal. Seven separate fires sparked by a record-setting heat wave have burned 135,000 acres of woodland across the country. Fires have prompted the Portuguese government to declare a national disaster and ask for help from the EU and from NATO.
Hello, Dental Group.
Ah.
Ms. Cole?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
Diplomats from the United States, Japan, and South Korea will all be gathering in the next few weeks for a planning session ahead of scheduled negotiations with North Korea. Those coming talks aimed at resolving the nuclear impasse with Pyongyang. Far East correspondent Celia Hatton has more from Beijing.
The United States, Japan, and South Korea are working together to gear up for talks with North Korea by holding a joint pre-planning session. The Reuters news agency is quoting an unnamed Japanese official as saying that all three countries will hold an informal meeting sometime in the next 2 weeks. Not long after that, all six countries, including China, Russia, and North Korea, will meet to discuss the future of North Korea's illicit nuclear weapons program. An official date and location for the talks has yet to be announced, although most analysts expect the multilateral negotiations to take place in Beijing in late August or early September. Celia Hatton, Beijing.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Years ago, a small hard drive meant a traffic-y physical commute. Today, it's the curse of telecommuting. But however you get to work, I'll pave the way with some timely maintenance tips when we come back.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered the company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com.
Whether you commute to work via old-fashioned blacktop or the Internet superhighway, automotive maintenance will give you more time for fun. Just remember, give me five. One, once a year, treat your vehicle to an annual inspection. Two, every 2 years, change brake fluid. Three, it's time for an oil service every 3,000 miles. Four, mark your calendar every 4 years for new radiator hoses. And five, rotate tires every 5,000 miles. Now, take five away from your busy job to enjoy a cruise in your well-maintained vehicle. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Here on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on traditional land-based terrestrial radio stations. I don't know quite how to say that. On real radio stations, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system covering the entire North American continent. And streaming live audio on the Internet from radiopower.org, iamericaradio.com, live365.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And radiopower.org is doing a fundraiser right now, by the way. They are supported by listener contributions, as it were. I encourage you to participate if you're listening to us on their audio stream. Good folks. Why are Americans so hooked on spending money they don't have? What does consumer debt have to do with the economy of the nation? How did this all come about? What's the history of this? What's the future of this? What are the dangers in this? And what are the opportunities? Does our heavy reliance on credit cards and mortgage debt put us at risk for another Great Depression? A lot of interesting questions here. Robert D. Manning is the Caroline Warner Gannett Professor of the Humanities at Rochester Institute of Technology, Rochester, New York. His recent book, Credit Card Nation, received the 2001 Robert Ezra Park Award for outstanding contribution to sociological practice from the Sociological Practice Association, and his path-breaking study, Credit Cards on Campus, received the 2000 Morris Rosenberg Award from the District of Columbia's Sociology Society. Is it Dr. Manning?
Yes. Pleasure.
Ah, Dr. Manning, welcome to the program.
Well, we're looking forward to educating some people about this amazing transformation that's occurred. It's certainly, generationally speaking, a revolution in its own right.
Well, give us some framing information on that. Let's talk about how credit has been viewed over the history of the United States.
Well, let's think of one of our old founding fathers, Ben Franklin, which was used in a national campaign by the Smithsonian Institution that said a penny saved was a penny earned. That thrift and frugality and all of that emphasis on industry was what was the very basis of success in achieving the American dream. And that being in debt implied somehow making bad decisions. And that staying out of debt and saving money was really a sign of prudence, and that one would be rewarded not just in this life but in the afterworld. So being in debt had a very strong social stigma, and nobody wanted to acknowledge it. I end my book with some license plates I found, and one of them said, "I'm bankrupt." So the stigma certainly is eroding, but it doesn't necessarily imply that Americans don't want to be frugal. It's a reflection of some of the major changes that have occurred over the last two decades.
Well, at the time of the American Revolution, as I recall, it was 3 out of 7 Americans in the northeastern states. I'd have to go back and find my stats, but I know here in Vermont it was fairly high. It might have even been 4 out of 7 people of not this was a non-slavery state. These were mostly European ancestry folks were actually indentured servants. They had traded typically seven years, sometimes as many as 14 or 15 years of their life to somebody on this side of the ocean in exchange for boat fare over from Europe to escape. Europe, sometimes bringing their family, and they were, you know, functionally slaves. They worked for to pay off that debt, and don't you think that had a lot to do with the stigma associated with debt? That people who were in debt were actually considered in slavery, in servitude.
Right. Of course, those people would get a reward at the end, where they could start their own small farms and have instruments to begin, and maybe even ultimately hire other people. But it certainly shows the social connection that being in debt had far-reaching consequences, that there were really different classes of people. Those who were in debt, such as the great planters to the British bankers, were so concerned about the pressure being brought to bear to them that they were some of the major catalysts for the American Revolution.
Yeah, so when did this change?
Well, you know, one of the key points that we've had as we've gone from an agricultural society with its rhythms, where there was always a dependency on credit, where farmers would have to borrow some money for the seed while they're waiting to bring in their harvest. So we've had that traditional rhythm of dependence on credit. But when we go to the industrial era and we have things like business cycles, and we're talking about before Social Security and unemployment compensation, et cetera, people were expected to save for that proverbial rainy day. The rule of thumb was you saved at least 10% of your salary for that unexpected crisis or event. Mm-hmm. Instead, what we've seen since the post-World War II period is that the shift from a manufacturing economy, and keep in mind today that some of the major profit centers of major corporations today is not on the production side or even the retailing side. It's on the financing side. And so what happens over the last 25 to 30 years is, as we've made that transition to a service-based economy, and keep in mind two-thirds of the gross domestic product of American economy is attributed to consumer services, that then entailed to keep the growth of the economy going as wages stagnated, it was essentially increased with the fuel of consumer credit. And what's really intriguing about that transitionary period is the focus of my book, and that is deregulation. That is,
okay,
many.
Okay, hang on just a second. Just to summarize what I think I just heard you say, it was essentially that as we exported our good manufacturing jobs and we moved more and more to flipping burgers at McDonald's and the service based economy, that the only way that the American middle class was able to sustain anything close to the lifestyle it had prior to, say, 1980, when this trend really started to pick up steam, was by borrowing. By going further and further and further into debt. Is that
Right, but and again, keep in mind, we have borrowed in the past, but we borrowed with a degree of prudence. And what happened before deregulation in 1980 is we had many regulations in place to protect our community banking system from things such as interstate banking restrictions that would prevent big banks from gobbling up small community banks and then taking their depositors' resources and lending them in other parts of the country. And
we also had usury laws that protected you and me, didn't we?
Absolutely. And since I've testified on that recently in Congress, I'll be happy to fill you in on that. But what also happened then is that we saw the end of Glass-Steagall protections, which we saw with the shenanigans in Wall Street, where banks were loaning money to big corporations like Enron and then selling Enron stock through their subsidiaries like Salomon Smith Barney with Citigroup, and that major conflict of interest finally imploded when we lost over $6 trillion worth of wealth in Wall Street. So,
right, and these were laws that were passed in the early 1930s.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it, of course, they're all gone now.
Passed
in 33 or 34.
But I think what most of your listeners would be surprised to know is there's two intriguing things. One, credit cards actually lost money. The Sears credit card in the 50s and 60s was the largest private issue credit card in the country. And they didn't even care about making money on it.
Credit they just wanted to drive sales.
Was simply to cement consumer loyalty.
Yeah, the RCA did the same thing with radios back in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the early beginning of consumer credit.
And you raise a really important point, is that the last major surge, the big, huge extension of consumer credit to the middle class was during the 1920s.
Right.
And, of course, we saw what some of those consequences were, although it's much different today. But when we fast forward that, what we saw in the early 1980s, and we're talking about the recession of 81, 82, is that the really big banks were losing a lot of money on their third world loans, on their commercial real estate loans, home mortgages were going into default during the recession. And the one real gem in the portfolio of the big banks such as Citibank was their credit card division. And so they decided that even though they lost $500 million between 1979 and 1981, when they raised the interest rates, because remember, inflation was so high in the late 70s, over 15%, when the inflation rate went down to 4%, 3%, the interest rates on credit cards stayed at 19-20%. And that's when they started marketing to people who were losing their jobs during the recession, and they found out that those people were so desperate for these lifelines of credit that no matter how much they got in debt, they would continue to pay the minimum on their credit cards. And that
right, and we're seeing the same thing. I'm trying to move this along because we don't have a lot of time in this segment, but we're seeing the same thing as well in home financing. People are going deeper and deeper into debt as interest rates have dropped, trying to pull the equity out of their houses. Do you see this as a bubble? It seems to me like we've got a housing bubble here that is, when Fed rates start going up or T-bill rates and T-bond rates start going up and as a result, mortgage rates go up, people aren't going to be, housing values are going to crash. People aren't going to be refinancing. They're not going to have that cash. They're not going to be using that cash to drive consumer spending. And we could be looking at a whole brand new crash in the economy.
Well, you raise a couple of really key issues about the perilousness of the current economy. One, of course, is that people have been so dependent upon appreciation of their houses because of low finance charges on their mortgages, and many of them are taking out equity that really didn't exist to pay off past spending that they couldn't afford to pay off because their salaries didn't increase. So as we see the long bond market, what's called the 30-year bond market, has gone up sharply in the last 2 weeks. We've seen the top end of the housing market is already in a free fall of deflation. And the real question is going to be is how serious a spike we're going to see in the default rate of mortgages. Because keep in mind that last year we had a record of 1.5 million bankruptcies. And that's in the context of the 1990s with the longest economic expansion in American history.
There's more bankruptcies than in any year during the Great Depression.
It's 12 times higher last year than it was during the trough of the Great Depression.
Yeah. Wow. So what we've got about 2 minutes left, and then we've got a break here, and then we'll have maybe 3 or 4 minutes that we can wrap this up with, and then we have to end the segment. So we're speaking with Dr. Robert Manning, by the way. It's 18 minutes and a half after the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. What should we be doing about this, both at the level of national policy and at the level of personal policy? You know, I see Ben in Illinois is on the line with a comment for the guest. Ben, hang on over the break, and we'll bring you in right after the break here. Dr. Manning, if you want to just give me a quick answer to that.
Well, the real problem is that financial prudence of individuals, of putting our household budgets on track, means that it could have a negative effect on the overall economy if we don't have an economic policy that's going to promote economic growth. Except based on consumers getting further and further in debt. That's the real dilemma, and that's where the power of the Federal Reserve has been taken away from Chairman Greenspan, because by lowering the interest rates, that was supposed to be passed on to consumers through lower interest rates on their credit cards. And of course, the credit card companies aren't passing on that savings to their consumers, so it's not stimulating the economy.
Right, they're just pocketing the money, although a lot of it did get passed along in the form of home mortgage cost reductions, but that apparently
well,
wasn't...
Well, they back in that with all the extra fees and insurance costs, et cetera. And keep in mind that all of that is taking money out of consumers to spend for real goods and services in the economy.
Got it. Robert Manning, we're speaking with. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Dr. Manning, stay on the line. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The General helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HD TV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There is a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, Dougie.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
They're shaking it up in our chat room. Go to TomHartmanShow.com and click the chat button, drop in. Have a lively and interesting conversation. It's always interesting when True USA 2000, an articulate conservative drops in, and rather than somebody who just comes in and, you know, yells and screams and swears and stuff, but this person actually has a few things to say, and it's really a fascinating thing to watch. We're talking with Robert D. Manning, along with liberals or whatnot. Anyhow, we're talking with Robert D. Manning of the Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York, and Ben in Illinois is on the line with a question for Dr. Manning. Ben, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom. I am seeing anecdotal evidence that we are in an inflating housing liquidity problem. A banker friend of mine told me the other day two very salient things. Thing number one, an amazing number of the people who are applying for refinancing are not qualifying at this point. They have a lot of people who are trying to refinance, trying to take some money out of their homes, and they're just finding that they're no longer meeting the requirements to get the refinancing. And the other thing is that she says they have houses that they're eight months plus in arrears on that they are afraid to foreclose on because they don't believe that they can get the cash for them that they're owed.
Yeah. So now you said inflating liquidity. It sounds like that's kind of a contradiction in terms that it would be more of a deflating liquidity.
Well, it's an inflating liquidity bubble, is what I'm saying.
I see. Okay. Dr. Manning, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, right now there's a couple of accounting scandals with Freddie Mac and some of the other major mortgage brokers that there's a real question about whether they've been truly clear about what their default rates are and how much who they're lending this money to and whether they certainly are adhering to their normal risk assessment models. The problem is right now, whether it's credit cards or mortgages, politicians right now don't really have a clue on how to jumpstart this economy given the dramatic changes of globalization. And they're looking at this band-aid of easy credit to try to reflate the economy and get it going again. And that's a band-aid that can only last for a short period of time. The bottom line is, if Americans don't make enough money to pay the mortgage at the end of the month, they're going to have to lose what little equity they have in it. But if they don't have much equity for a down payment, then they're really not losing much. And that's why we're going to see a big spike in mortgage foreclosures. But the caller is absolutely correct. A lot of banks are afraid to foreclose right now because they're afraid they're going to get their money. They're not going to get it out.
Right. Ben, thanks for that call. I appreciate you calling in. Dr. Manning, what in the minute or so that we have left here in the show, and I want to thank you in advance for coming on the program. I appreciate your wisdom and insight, and your book, Credit Card Nation, is available, I'm assuming, through the usual suspects. Do you have a website that you can point us to?
Yes. Certainly encourage your listeners to go to my website at creditcardnation.com. Certainly have all of my congressional testimonies. My new book, which is a consumer guide to using credit cards more effectively, will be coming out in the spring, and that's called Give Yourself Credit. And I would strongly emphasize that the big trend right now is corporations are taking away the power of local governments and state governments to influence things like state usury laws and what's
right.
called the federal preemption based on the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. Now that we have national banks, they're essentially saying that states cannot regulate them and that that only becomes the purview of Congress.
So, Dr. Manning, in 20 seconds or less, what can we do about this?
Support your state attorney generals, read your terms of your contract, and don't accept adjustments to those contracts that deny you the right of grievance by denying you the rights of a class action lawsuit. That's what's happening right now.
Yeah, and you think that there's a legislative remedy here, that if we can get our Congress people excited about these kinds of things?
Well, right now, Congress is trying to take away the power of state attorney generals to pursue enforcement against the real scoundrels of the financial service industry. And we really have to back up our state attorney generals right now.
So we have to stop Congress from doing that. I'm assuming you're talking about the Republicans in Congress.
Right.
Although I'm sure that there's a large number of Democrats in their pockets.
Bipartisan.
Well.
Remember, Secretary of Treasury under Clinton is now Senior Vice President of Citigroup.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, Dr. Manning, thank you very much. I appreciate your being on the program. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Laura Miller. Not rain, nor sleet, nor snow can stop the Postal Service from its appointed rounds, but according to the American Postal Workers Union, a government panel just might. This week, Postal Union President William Burris blasted a presidential commission on postal service reform. The commission recommends creating a postal regulatory board whose politically appointed members would have the authority to set postage rates and even open parts of the postal service to competition. The unions also worried proposed changes would undermine the collective bargaining rights of postal employees.
The problems continue for Nigeria's oil industry. In addition to an ongoing peaceful occupation of a pumping station by Nigerian women, four oil workers have been kidnapped in the last month. The latest occurred on Friday. Two of the country's largest refineries are shut down due to renewed ethnic violence in the Delta region, and a shortage of fuel oil in the country is becoming so dire that the president of the Nigeria Labor Congress says as many as 500,000 people may be thrown out of work when factories begin running dry. That could start as early as this week. Meanwhile, fuel oil exports continue at an unabated pace.
Whether or not it's legal, 325 nurses in Easton, Pennsylvania are walking a picket line outside Lehigh Valley Hospital this week. Nurses with the United Independent Union struck just after midnight on Monday, fed up with negotiations that have failed to replace a contract which expired 2 months ago. The hospital insists the strike is illegal and has filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board, but the nurses say they gave a 10-day strike notice as required by law. The union says an offer of a 12% wage increase next year isn't enough to offset a rollback in overtime protection, sick days, vacation days, and other benefits.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest.
Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We have grown, although our love is still special. Let's take a chance and fly away somewhere.
Time flies so quickly. And 2.5 hours flown by. Fascinating topics here. We've been talking about the roots of the Great Depression, repealing NAFTA and WTO. What was Smoot-Hawley all about? It sounds rather didactic, but it's actually, I think this has been fascinating. We got a good response, and the folks in our chat room seem to be interesting. Sonny Colley is the president of Consumer Credit Counseling Services, CCCS, of Savannah, Georgia, an organization that provides credit counseling and assistance to consumers and businesses. Prior to starting CCCS, Mr. Colley was senior vice president at the Savannah Bank and at the First National Bank of Effingham, and prior to that, vice president of the First Union Bank of Georgia. He's worked in banking and credit for over 35 years. Mr. Colley, thank you for joining us on the program. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it very much, sir.
Tell me, first of all, we've been talking here about the broad implications of this consumer debt situation where just 70, 80 years ago, consumer debt was pretty much unavailable, and then right up until the 60s, pretty much credit card companies, most credit cards, the Sears credit card, for example, throughout the 1950s was the most widely used credit card. Sears made no money at all on the credit card. It was just to promote the sales of their products. And credit came into its own as an industry in the 70s as a result of the inflation during the Nixon administration. When the inflation abated, the credit card companies, after the usury laws were rolled back to allow for credit cards to track inflation, when inflation abated, the credit card companies held these really high interest rates and just started making a pile of cash mm-hmm. off people's use of credit, and that's continuing to this day. Do you see this as a trend that is potentially destructive to democracy or to our economy in general?
There's no two ways about it. I sort of was in the forefront of the credit card game when it got started. I was with Savannah Bank, and my job was to start one of the first credit card organizations down in this area. We had a bank in Savannah, and it was named CNS Bank, which is now Bank America. Mm-hmm. And they had a statewide credit card group, and then we brought in the MasterCharge logo. And so people now, our friends are saying, I'm getting my just due.
I introduced people
to the cards, and now I'm helping to straighten them up, you know.
This would have been about 25 years ago, maybe, 30
yes.
years ago?
Yeah. But anyway, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we've got an office in a predominantly college community. It's called Statesboro, Georgia. They've got about 18,000 young people over there in that college, and we've got an office in that community, and we see these young people come in and they're crying. They've maybe not made the right choices with these credit cards, but credit cards are being promoted. Credit cards are being distributed. The young people don't have an income, and so when they graduate and they get ready to taste the dream of home ownership, they can't qualify.
Right.
They got too much debt.
Yeah.
We see people that are in their September years with 40 and 50 credit cards.
Holy cow. Literally.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness. And this is a relatively new phenomenon. I don't think that in the history of the United States we've ever had a situation like this until really this period from the early 80s until today. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think you're 100% right. I mean, and what's happening now is that credit card companies are selling their loan portfolios to other credit card companies. I mean, we just
they're trading in debt.
Yeah, Home Depot sold to Citibank. We had Sears sold to Citibank. I mean, this has been within the last 30 days. Mm-hmm. We had regional banks down here in our community that sold to MBNA. And so
do you think they're trying to bail out of the credit realm because they see bad times coming?
I don't know. Maybe they feel there's more liability there than they want to assume. But you're seeing a lot of that now. And you're seeing that, we saw one lady that came in here that had 5 credit cards from one company. One company she had 5 credit cards to.
That's criminal. That's amazing. So what do people do? We're talking with Sonny Colley, president of the Consumer Credit Counseling Services. What's your website, by the way, Mr. Colley?
We have on our website is CCCS, and then you spell out Savannah all the way, SAVANNAH.org.
Okay, great.
And that will get to us.
Okay, great. And walk us through it. Let's pretend that, you know, I'm somebody who's just come into your office and I've got 15 or 20 credit cards and they're all maxed out and my home mortgage is maxed out and all that kind of stuff. What do I do? What's your advice?
Well, first of all, let me just mention a couple of things about the Consumer Credit Counseling Organization.
Okay.
We're an accredited agency. We have to go through a oversight, and it's through what they call the Council on Accreditation, which is the most prestigious organization for doing oversight for nonprofit organizations. They're in New York.
Right.
Our counselors have to go through a certification process. And recently, the state of Georgia is requiring a great deal more than in the past. They have to have an audited of the trust account, have to keep the client's money separate. They have a fee restrictions and such as that.
Now, isn't this because there are some hustlers out there who are posing as credit counselors, and they're basically saying, yeah, come on in, we'll help you. By the way, we'll consolidate all your credit card debt into one debt where you owe it to us. And, by the way, it's 22%, but don't worry, you know, that kind of thing. I mean,
here's what happens. And we had a lady in here last week, $125,000 in credit card debt. She was talking to a credit counseling organization, and they asked for an upfront fee of $1,950. They asked for $190.
Which she could put on her credit card, right?
Sir?
Which she could put on her credit card, right?
Possibly.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying they asked for something a month?
Yes, $190 a month. Our agency asked for an initial contribution of $25. And we asked for an initial contribution of $25 a month. That was back before the law was changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you have a out-of-town organization that has no face-to-face contact with the individual, charging $1,900, $190 a month. Local organization charging $25, and you can come in and look at them face-to-face.
Yeah. So step by step, what does this woman do? She's got $125,000.
What she does is we put it on what we call an application. And you see, we work with and we're part of a trade association called the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. And through that group, we're able to offer concessions to to consumers.
In other words, you can act on behalf of the consumer and talk to the creditor and say,
listen.
Exactly,
reduce your interest rate.
Oh, interesting.
Yes,
interesting.
Sir. Some of the credit card companies allow us to use a zero rate. Some allow us to use 7. Some allow us to use 9. Some allow us to use 11. Some of them will not cut their interest rate.
Presumably, those who do cut it are doing it on the basis of the theory that they'd rather get at least their principal back than have this person go bankrupt.
Certainly. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And then we apply those concessions to their balances. And then with consumer credit counseling, our counselors sit down and help them work out a livable budget. In other words, you cannot pay out more than you got coming in. And so the income has got to match the financial responsibility, and it's got to match your living expenses. And when those balance, then they know what their financial parameters are. So we sit down with every consumer that comes in our office, and they have a budget before they go out of our doors. They know what their financial parameters are on each item in their living expense.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are able to take the funds that they've got coming in, take care of the needs in their life, and pay their creditors. They make one payment to us, we send it out to their creditors.
Now, how many of these people have to go through a radical downscaling of their lifestyle where they have to, for example, move out of one housing situation and move into another that's less expensive, or they have to get rid of their car?
There's a number of things that they can do. They certainly can get rid of assets like automobiles, boats, motorcycles, such as I get another job. Each one is a little bit different. Younger mm-hmm. couple, we might recommend that they move in with a member of their family to help them if they're renting, to try to cut back until we can get them on an even keel and get them going again. We might recommend that if they've got equity in their house and that maybe they see about getting a home equity loan rather than coming through us. In other words, we'll try to help them see what's best for them and their situation.
Sounds great. We're talking with Sonny Colley, president of the Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Savannah, Georgia. Their website is ccssavannah.org. And Mr. Colley, thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate the insight and enlightenment you've shared with our listeners. One final bit of advice that you'd like to share before we wrap up here?
I think the best thing to do is if someone has got some financial challenges and they're concerned about who to talk with, call your local Better Business Bureau. Ask the company, are they accredited? Is their total company nonprofit? Because what you see in some of these organizations is that they have multi-level departments or multi-level organizations, and maybe the initial contact individual or the initial contact group is nonprofit, but the operations, the marketing, and all that is a for-profit entity.
In other words, there are sharks out there in the consumer counseling.
There's more
business.
Out there. There's some out there that are not in the water, I can tell you that.
There you go. Okay. Mr. Colley, thank you very much. Sonny Colley, president of Consumer Credit Counseling Services, CCS Savannah.org. I appreciate you being on the program. Thanks for joining
us.
Yes,
sir. I appreciate it very much, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Got an email here from, this isn't an email. It was posted on our message board, Warm Fire. A message, member 1431 says, where is that quote from Greenspan saying it's the job of the Fed to keep workers insecure in order to keep wages down? And Bill King replies, if ever that quote, Bill is in Illinois, he replies, if ever that quote was made, it would appear on the front page of every newspaper in America, and Allen himself would join the ranks of the unemployed. And Warmfire says, well, actually, Tom mentioned it twice this week on the air. Indeed, I did. And there's no shortage of these. John Kirk Fitzpatrick, let's see, where is he located? In Grand Rapids, Michigan, says he's got some great quotes here that, along with the links. You can find these if you go to TomHartmanShow.com and click on the message board. He says, this is a quote from WSWS.org. Greenspan said that inflation has been held down in the United States, quote, because of concerns among workers about job security, end quote. Now, see, this is the key point. When Greenspan talks about wage inflation, which he talks about frequently and has over the years, and this has been the prevailing policy of the Fed since Ronald Reagan came into office in the early 1980s, largely. When the Fed chairman talks about wage inflation, what they mean is people making more money. And we can't have wage inflation. Now, it's okay if we have CEO pay inflation. That's no problem. We've seen CEO pay go up 300, 400, 500 times. It's okay if we have dividend inflation. It's okay if we have reduction in taxes on capital gains. It's okay if those people who sit on their butts waiting for their dividend checks to come in for a living pay less taxes and have a higher income. That's not considered part of inflation. But if people who work for a living start earning more, then according to Mr. Greenspan, that's inflation and has to be stopped. And the way you stop that is by cooling down the economy to throw people out of work so that there are more people competing for the same number of jobs so that the average pay goes down and corporate profitability goes up. Another article here for WSWS, the rapidity of change in our capital asset, this is Greenspan speaking again, the infrastructure with which all workers must interface day by day, has clearly raised the level of anxiety and insecurity in the workforce, the Fed chairman remarked. Now keep in mind, he's not saying that that's a bad thing. In past comments, Greenspan has boasted that rising job insecurity, making workers less willing to fight for substantial wage increases, is one reason inflation has remained so low under conditions of a tight labor market. Another quote here, Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan has repeatedly complained that the tight labor market was forcing employers to bid up wages and benefits to attract workers. Significant wage increases, he told Congress last February, would intensify inflationary pressures or squeeze profit margins, with either outcome capable of bringing our growing prosperity to an end. So prosperity is good as long as it doesn't translate into higher worker wages. This is the logic of the cons who suggest that the economy is in recovery. We talked to Robert Reich on this program yesterday, and he is suggesting that the way that we should determine whether we're in a recession or not is whether or not people are getting jobs, not whether or not corporations are making more profit. I mean, the whole reason why we as a nation, why we the people, authorize the existence of business is so that ultimately it will serve some positive public good. And that's a fine thing. Business does serve the public good when it operates appropriately, efficiently, profitably. God bless them. But when you have a Fed policy that is to control interest rates in order to control the job market. Now here's the big quote, and this is in Class War in America by Charles Kelly. From the Wall Street Journal, January 27, 1997. Workers' fear of losing their jobs restrains them from seeking the pay raises that usually crop up when employers have trouble finding people to hire. Even if the economy didn't slow down as he expected, Alan Greenspan told Fed colleagues last summer he saw little danger in a sudden upturn. Quote, because workers are more worried about their own job security and their markability, if forced to change jobs, they are accepting smaller increases in their pay, Mr. Greenspan told Congress. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. This is...
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America radio program. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and Linda in Cupertino is on the line. Linda, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Yes,
hey, Linda.
You were talking, of course, about an economy that just doesn't create profits for corporations, but also creates jobs. But we have to redefine the economy as one which does, which creates profits but also creates good-paying jobs, because during the 90s boom, of course, many jobs were created, millions of jobs, but they were low-paying service jobs.
Right.
And a lot of the good-paying jobs in manufacturing and white-collar professional management and administrative jobs were sent overseas. Permanently.
Yeah, this was the Democratic Leadership Council, you know, Bill Clinton and all these guys. This was their idea, you know, Republican light, you know, let's kick open the doors.
Well, I don't blame all of globalization on Clinton and the DLC, I'm afraid. But see, the problem is that these low-paying service jobs, which we are left with in this country, which we are all fighting for. This is why the tax cuts of the Republicans are so appealing to more and more Americans, because they're looking at their shrinking paycheck. They don't have salary increases anymore. They have a low-paying service job. They have higher household debt. Where else but on their paycheck do they look for making some money for themselves? And, of course, they look at the tax box. And if we start, you know, if I just fear that these low-paying service jobs are really going to push tax cuts and make them much more appealing to Americans in the next few years.
Although a lot of people who are working low-paying service jobs are not paying income tax. I mean, wage taxes. What's the word?
Employment.
You know, yeah,
payroll.
They're paying
payroll.
FICA payroll taxes. Yes, but they don't. A lot of these folks don't realize that when the president says, oh, "We're going to cut your income taxes," and they're not paying any income taxes, that he's not talking about they're going to get a tax cut. Even though they are paying taxes, they're just not paying income taxes.
Right. The payroll taxes keep climbing. Because the Republicans, and with some Democrats' help, are shifting the tax burden from the very wealthy who can afford this stuff to the middle class.
To the middle class and the poor. Good point, Linda. Thank you for the call. We're up against the end of the show. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and engineered by Jay Blecky, John Lucas, and Steve Damschroeder in Detroit. Thanks for joining us today. And tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Anaconda.
Fudgy.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Mountain bat.
This is IE America.